The National Broadcasting Company presents the American Forum of the Air, founded 21 years ago by Theodore Granick and dedicated to the full and public discussion of all sides of all issues, coming to you from the famous Metronome Room of the Wardman Park Hotel in Washington, D.C. Now, here is your moderator, Mr. Granick.
Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. We've been reading and hearing a great deal about lobbying in Washington. I wonder how many of us realize that during the first 9 months of this year, over $6 million were spent for the purpose of influencing legislation pending before our Congress. Now, as you know, the First Amendment to our Constitution guarantees to the American people the right to petition Congress. But we're concerned whether this right, this privilege, has been abused. Has lobbying become necessary? Is it useful? Is it desirable? Or is it really just an evil? Now, today we've invited three prominent authorities to give us their views on the subject. Here is Herbert Nelson, Executive Vice President of the National Association of Real Estate Boards. Joseph D. Keenan, Director of Labor's League for Political Education, American Federation of Labor. And Colonel Robert S. Allen, noted Washington correspondent and co-author of the famous Washington Merry-Go-Round. Now, Bob Allen, with all your experience around Washington, and as editor of the recent bestseller, Our Sovereign State, which delves into this question of lobbying, you should be pretty much of an expert on this question. So, Bob, give us your definition. What is lobbying?
Well, with the exception of a small minority, not over 5%, which is forced into it for its own protection, lobbying is the practice by means of which mercenary interests bludgeon the government into obtaining benefits, advantages, and profits at the expense of the public and, in many instances, the welfare of the country. Now, this type of lobbying has become a sinister menace in our whole political system. On the national level, it is the bulwark now of extreme reaction. In the state levels, it virtually controls many state governments. And to sum up, in my book, lobbying and lobbyists, that type, are the goons of the legislative system, the political system.
Nelson, how about that definition?
Well, Mr. Allen, I hope you feel that we belong to the 5% that you feel are legitimate. Small business must have a spokesman nowadays, or it will be crushed between big business, big government, and big labor. And insofar as our group is concerned, we represent typical small business throughout the country. And if we didn't have some spokesman here at Washington and elsewhere, we would be simply wiped out.
Mr. Keenan?
I don't know what Mr. Nelson means by the term big labor, but down through the years, we in labor done our work in committees known as legislative committees. We had them set up in every state in the Union, and we had a legislative committee here in Washington. Fact of the matter is that Samuel Gompers' first assignment with the American Federation of Labor was a legislative representative in 1882. And I think that we in the labor movement are satisfied with our legislative committees trying to develop legislation for the benefit of the people of the country.
Well, Bob, what is that menace to which you refer?
Well, the menace I refer to is very simple. Lobbying today has become the great medium by which party discipline, party controls are perverted and destroyed, that is, blocked. We have a system in our country today, whereby political parties run on platforms. Those platforms have come to mean absolutely nothing. Men are pledged to certain policies. It's an open book. They're elected on that. Comes to the state legislatures, come to the Congress of the United States, and nothing happens. And in my experience, that is due chiefly and to largely because of the operations of lobbyists and lobbying.
Well, I think... Did you want to answer that? Go ahead, Joe.
Well, I think that he's absolutely right. Down through the years, your state legislatures were practically controlled by a small group. And it's been definitely stated and proved that from time to time, in order to try to keep the rank and file satisfied, that they threw them a few bones in the in the way of some legislation that they were interested in.
Mr. Nelson?
Don't you think, Mr. Allen, that lobbying, as authorized by Congress, is a necessary part of the public discussion of different economic questions, and that unless these groups came here and told Congress what their interests are, they would probably not be properly considered. So many Congress itself is elected purely on a geographic basis, but our economy is today largely divided into great economic groups, farmers and labor and business and the sciences and education and all sorts of groupings, all of whom want their say. Well, now, the alternative to lobbies, Mr. Allen, would be what they have in France. It's a splinter party system where they have 25 parties, and everybody, small property owners have a party, and the merchants have a party, and labor has a party, and everybody has a party. Well, the consequence is that you can't have any reasonable government. Every government is a coalition government. And in the last 4 or 5 years, France has had 13 different governments. There's no stability. And we don't like the idea of the splinter party system. We'd rather have the lobbies.
Yes, I'm sure you would, Mr. Nelson. You raised a lot of points here. Let me take them up if I can remember one at a time. To begin with, Congress has never authorized lobbying or lobbyists. Congress, what little it's done, and that's pathetically little, has been to try to curb the machinations of lobbyists, or as I...
Would you outlaw them altogether, Bob?
Well, let's not get to that first. Let me make a few points here in reply to Mr. Nelson. That point nailed down. Congress has never authorized lobbying, to begin with. Secondly, about this splinter group business that you were talking about. The most stable, the oldest, and the finest types of democracies we have in the world today, the Scandinavian countries and in Britain, there is no such thing as lobbying and lobbyists. They don't have splinter parties. The reason why France has splinter parties has nothing to do with lobbying and representing special interest groups. That's something due to their own weird and justified, or they're entitled to whatever they have, their system.
I think Mr. Keener wants a word there. Go ahead.
Well, I think there's lobbies and lobbies. I believe that to go in and to inform the members of Congress or the member of the legislature on issues that you're interested in is one thing. But the pressures that are used, and they're general throughout the United States, that's another thing.
Now we're getting
going into the personal affairs of congressmen, if they're in small business, bringing down the banks on their loans, and there's a number of ways that they have of getting to the congressmen who want to serve all the people. And that, I think, is where
Mr. Allen,
nobody will defend the abuses of lobbies. And I admit that there are such things, but to get down to fundamentals, the Constitution itself guarantees that people shall have the right of petition. And many of the lobbies are just that.
Oh, many, yeah,
they,
but
they present to
many
Congress
aren't.
The viewpoint of,
but,
a, of
but
an
Mr.
important
Nelson,
group of
Mr. Nelson, that's just the point that Mr. Keenan was making. The right of petition is one thing, and the right to bludgeon members of the legislatures, Congress, and other governmental agencies by, for instance, as you were talking about a little while ago, where the bank calls in a congressman or legislator who's got some outstanding loan saying, now, look, Joe, if you don't come clean on this, we're going to have to call your loan or your mortgage, which is a very common experience. And let me just continue this a bit further. Lobbying isn't only the kind that's represented by yourself where you stand out, you're placarded, you're registered. We know you're a lobbyist. No bones about it. May not like it, but there you are. But lobbying now goes right into the legislatures. These great mercenary interests now buy legislators. Most of them are lawyers, okay, to give them a fee, handle a case. Or he's in a real estate business, so he gets that kind of business. Or an insurance business. You want the details? Pick up that book and you'll find it there on every page. Our sovereign state, the names and details, that book's been out for 3 months, and not one of those jokers that have been mentioned in it, and there are hundreds of them, has yet dared to rear his head and say that's a lie.
Mr. Allen, I would be glad to join you in suppressing that type of a lobby.
If
you also would join me in suppressing all types of lobbies that intimidate the members of Congress.
I'll join you readily, Mr. Nelson.
I'll agree. I'll go along, too.
I think the most vicious type of lobby I know... consists of certain government departments that spend unauthorized money.
You wouldn't be talking about the Army engineers, would you?
I'm talking about certain government departments.
Well, let's get down to cases. I have no bones about naming names. The Army engineers in my book is the most sinister and vicious and unprincipled lobby in the whole governmental system.
Well, then you
and
agree.
That doesn't accept the real estate people.
You
or
agree.
The AMA.
You agree, Mr. Allen, that the departments of government that undertake to press for certain appropriations or certain laws should also be under control and be registered.
Very definitely. Very definitely.
Right there, Mr. Keenan, Dr. Henderson, the president-elect of the AMA, sent letters to all congressmen stating that the alleged antitrust investigation against the medical societies were political terrorism against them in retaliation for their stand on national health insurance. Now, do you condone that
agree.
Government
I
lobby?
I think that there is no lobby in the history of this country has gone so far below the belt in trying to confuse the people than the lobby of the AMA. Now, everybody here in Washington who has anything to do with health insurance knows that they have no interest at all in socialized medicine. And what we want to do as laboring people is set up an insurance so that we can pay our just doctor bills and hospital bills if it comes time that we need to do so due to some major illness or some major accident. And I think that all through the country, they've set up and tried to confuse everyone as to just what we are trying to do, and they're trying to beat down the members of Congress in trying to disregard the health insurance law that will be probably up in the next half of the next session.
I want to revert, if I may, to a point here that we touched on a little a moment ago but kind of missed, and that is the matter of party discipline, where a party is elected on a platform, as is done in these Scandinavian countries and Britain, and that party pushes through that platform. And any member of those legislatures who defies that principle, that platform, or who balks at it is automatically expelled. And we wouldn't have so many of the evils that we're now confronting. Things such as, let me read you this little item. May come home to you, sir. Nothing personal. Kendall Cady, who heads a lobby of his own, made an astounding speech before the granddaddy of all these lobbies, the National Association of Real Estate Boards. Here's what Mr. Cady said. The time to fight this battle, that is, the battle against rent control, is now and not next June, because next June he's members of Congress are going to be interested in getting elected. So the thing to do is to go in and get them now. And meanwhile, while we're getting them now, he said the thing to do is to cut down on the appropriation of the rent control administrator. The first thing, Katie explained, is to influence Congress and induce the national legislators to tell
Mr.
housing
Allen,
administrator Ty Woods that he won't get any more money.
When you talk rent control, that's down Mr. Nelson's alley.
Yes,
he wants to ask you a question.
In my opinion, that is the most vicious kind of lobbying. There is direct perversion of the will of the people who, through their representatives in Congress, enacted a rent control act. And if that is the law of the land, then it is beholds everybody to observe it, whether they got a mercenary interest in it or not.
Let Mr. Nelson answer that. Go ahead, Mr.
Yes,
Nelson.
I thought we were discussing another question, but if we want to discuss that, may I ask you, Mr. Allen, if this isn't true, that all that the people who oppose rent control have been asking of the government is to be let alone. Now, we haven't asked for any favors. We have simply asked for the removal of the same controls on prices that have been lifted on everything else. And we still continue to ask that. That's perfectly reasonable. And if somebody doesn't ask that, where do you think this control would ultimately go?
Well, let me ask this.
All property interests.
Well, let me ask this.
One at a time.
You have the real estate boards and the real estate groups of this country have an obligation if the controls are lifted. They must see to it that these people that own the property don't double and triple the rent.
That's right.
Now, I think that this thing of just coming and fighting for something and taking no responsibility for the results is absolutely wrong.
Joe, we've taken responsibility
for
the
results. I've discussed it with your men many, many times. When they came to me when I was in the War Production Board, that we'd go along if they would guarantee that the people wouldn't be gouged and nobody could give us that guarantee. And then we had a look to government in order to keep the controls on.
Let Mr. Nelson answer that. Go ahead, Herb.
Wherever rent controls have been lifted now, we have organized groups of property owners to hold rents down. But, of course, we can't control every individual any more than your movement
what
can.
About
that's
Omaha, where you lifted rent controls and they've gone up 300%
oh,
in
no,
four
no,
or five months?
12% is 12% the average.
12% a month, yeah. That's
no,
300%
no,
a year.
No, that's a misstatement, Mr. Allen. That's a misstatement.
Well, I take that another question on disability insurance. Now, this Congress in the first session worked 9 months trying to work out a Social Security law in line with the time. And in that law, there's a disability insurance provision. Now, the insurance companies have agreed with the AMA that they would take up their fight against health insurance if the doctors, on the other hand, would fight disability insurance.
Now, Joe, aren't you satisfied, however, that we should have a system under which every group can have its say and make its pay
absolutely.
For
absolutely.
Fair treatment and for
absolutely.
Justice and present the facts.
I'm for that kind of a lobby.
Aren't you, Mr. Allen, willing that we should have a system where those who presume to have lobbies are registered and whether they tell the people in the public record what money they spend and what who they represent so that there's nothing
absolutely.
Hidden or sinister about
that's
it?
That's just a start, Mr. Nelson. That's
then
just
what is it we're discussing? What do you want to do? We say our lobby's necessary. What do you want to do if you
well,
admit
I,
that
I,
they are necessary?
That's a legitimate question. I tell you what I want to do, what I'd like to see done. One thing I think that's necessary is that we get at the root of these elements and interests who are the key to this whole lobbying problem. That is the great mercenary forces in that.
You mean the farmers?
No, the farmers aren't mercenary. They're trying to get a little of what the other guys are taking from them by wholesale. Now, just let me explain what I'm trying to get at. You are registered now as a lobbyist. We have a registration law which they require to register and state what they get, how much they're spending. But no one knows who is putting up this money for the interests that are financing these lobbyists. And a way to get at that is very simple, and that is to make public all income tax returns so that everybody, big or small, is on public record of what he's doing with his money. And then we can trace the DuPonts and the steel people and the shipping interests and the munitions interests and all these other interests, just who and how they're operating these lobbies and the utility interests.
Oh, I don't object to that.
Oh, you don't?
Will you go along?
Let him answer that. Go ahead.
Will you go along and also see that there is a public record made or that Congress requires a public record made of every dollar spent? My government agencies that you previously
absolutely.
Referred to,
that's
who seek to educate the public and to dragoon the members of Congress into larger appropriations for their particular activities as a matter of selfish interest?
Very much so, Mr. Nelson, but I'll say the problem of that, of controlling the governmental agencies, gets down to one thing. Anytime a president of the United States wants to really control those agencies and stop them, he can stop them. Any president of the United States who wants to do it can stop these Army engineers dead in their tracks overnight.
Gentlemen,
but no one has ever done it yet.
I'm curious about this problem. When an executive director or other officer appears before of a not large organization, appears before a congressional committee, he sometimes says he represents 100,000 or 200,000 or several million. Now, shouldn't there be some certification that a majority or a two-thirds vote of the membership authorize such representation? What do you think of that, Mr. Nelson?
Wouldn't be talking about the American Legion, would you?
No. You have any comment on that, Mr. Nelson?
Well, I think that's probably a reasonable requirement. The bona fides of the representation is always a proper thing to do. You ought to qualify as a good witness before Congress.
Now I'll take some questions from the audience. I see Ms. Penuel has a question there. Go ahead, sir.
Why, the question is directed to Mr. Keenan. It says, does not the activity of any given lobby stimulate the activity of another lobby? If so, where does it end and who's going to pay for it?
Well, that's right. I think that lobbies are legislative committees were developed out of necessity to correct something that they felt was wrong. And I think it's just a spiral apparatus that one group finds that they're successful in directing and setting up a lobby, and the other group feel that in order to overcome it, they too must set up a lobby.
Lobbies beget lobbies. Eh?
That's right.
How about that, Bob?
Yeah, no question about it. You take Mr. Nelson, raised the point here of labor lobbies and farm lobbies. I don't know whether he did, but anyway, it was injected. Educational lobbies, other kind of lobbies. Those are essentially protective lobbies. They've been forced into that. because of the operations of other forces.
You're describing my particular group now, too.
There's no question about that. But you get down to the point of where you're going to stop, where the lobbies now, for instance, in many state legislatures, many states, the lobbies are now so powerful and so dominant that they've become officially tagged as the third house of the legislature. And the third house means that they run the legislature. Bills can get by unless these jokers who are on private payrolls say yes or no. They turn on and off the tap.
Let's go into our House audience for a question. Go ahead, ma'am.
Mr. Allen, what are some of the benefits, if any, of lobbying?
I don't know of any. They're all evil. Even when the lobbyists are on the right side, on the side of God, they're still bad. You can't correct an evil by another evil.
How about them, sir? Did you want to answer that,
Joe? Bob, I would like to know how the members of Congress could become informed on all of the legislation that passed over their desks. I think that you must have some kind of a group that would be available to discuss many of these complicated laws that are presented.
Joe, I'll answer that very simply again by party discipline. A party's elected on a platform. That is the party's policy, and it enacts that, and anything else goes out of the window. That's what you have in Britain, and who's going to say that that isn't a very efficient government? We may not like it, but it's good enough to take us.
Well, I'd have to agree.
And
that
goes for the Scandinavian countries, the oldest and the best democracies in the world. They don't have these problems. Why should we have them? We have them because there's no such thing as party discipline. A party's elected into office, and whereupon everybody in that party then goes off on his own tangent all over the lot and brings in all sorts of legislation, a lot of it lobbyist-induced and lobbyist-projected. That's why you have these problems. Now, getting down as to handing the legislation that comes over these desks, if Congress would set up an objective, an expert legislative bureau to handle all this stuff, it could handle it, but they don't do that.
I'll take another question. Go ahead, sir.
Yes, I'd like to ask a question. Mr. Keenan, a few years ago when lobbying was being discussed on the floor of Congress, one congressman got up and said that it looked to him as though a lobbyist was a citizen who opposed some bill that a particular congressman was for, whereas a patriot was some citizen who supported a bill that particular congressman was for. Do you feel that that's a fair distinction?
No, I don't. I think that every bill rises or falls on its merit. And I think that the members of Congress are just like a judge. They represent all the people. They should get the facts and make the decision on the facts without any pressure.
Joe, you agree then that members of Congress cannot know the impact or the effects of legislation they're considering unless somebody comes and tells them.
On certain kinds of complicated legislation.
Whether it's real estate or whether it's labor or whether it's manufacturing.
That's right, that's right.
Well, if they represent...
Those people have to be in there to tell Congress what it's doing.
All right, Mr. Nelson, then Congress should call the people it wants to tell it.
They do.
That's right.
And not being furnished that kind of advice by mercenary interests or private or other interests whose interest it is to tell Congress their point of view. When the legislation comes up, then Congress calls the people it wants. The representatives of these various interests that are affected, they come before it, they tell their story, and they get out of town. Fine.
Another question. Go ahead, sir, before we get out of town.
Mr. Nelson, can you suggest a mechanism through which full information would be available to members so to help eliminate destructive lobbying?
Members of Congress, you mean?
Yes, members of Congress.
Well, there is a legislative bureau in the Library of Congress, and congressmen have many research agencies available to them. But the fact is that the congressman who sits here and tries to pass on something in a remote place doesn't know, and he can never know unless he hears from those people.
Well, I think we could go back to Bob's solution. I believe last year that the President of the United States traveled up and down this country.
Right.
He made his program very clear. He stood on certain issues. He stood for repeal of the Taft-Hartley. He stood for increase in minimum wages. He stood for better
program.
Social Security.
Go ahead. I'm sorry.
Our program. Well, I say that may correct it. Now, if these people that were elected on the Democratic Party, the program...
Jim, I'm sorry. We have time now just for summaries. Herb Nelson, would you sum up, please?
Well, my position generally is that business and labor and the farmers and all the important economic groups in the country and the cultural groups, too, are entitled to have their say. And very often, the only way they can have their say is to appear before Congress with facts, with information, and try to instruct Congress on what their particular interest requires. Now, that's a right guaranteed by the Constitution, and that's lobbying. And I think we have to have it if we're going to have any freedom of action at all.
Mr. Keenan, your summary, please.
Well, I believe that we, due to the system, we must have lobbies. But I believe that the lobbies should be informational sources and not pressure groups. And if we do that, I think we can correct most of the abuses that we've witnessed here in the last 10 or 12 years.
Go ahead, Mr. Keenan. You have a little more time for your summary. Will you proceed? Mr. Keenan, will you go ahead with a little more of summary?
That's all.
Go ahead, Mr. Allen.
Lobbying today, 95% of the lobbying that we have today is a sinister evil. It's an obstructive, reactionary influence. It was never contemplated by the founders of our country. It's not in the Constitution. It was not authorized by Congress or any other legislative agency that I know of. It is an evil that is becoming so pervasive and so vicious that it's about to take over government itself. It has in many states, as is evidenced by shown very clearly in Our Sovereign State, the book there. Unless some action is taken to curb this evil, we will be confronted in a very short time with a situation where lobbying and lobbyists will dominate our legislative processes. They're doing it in some states, and they're already beginning to do it in many, many fields in the national picture, in the Congress. What the solution is, it entails more than just one simple answer. There's not one simple answer to it. But we can start by opening up the income tax returns of everybody in the country so that we can get at this question of where this money is going. Publicity is one solution. It may not be the whole answer because party discipline is another answer. But publicity and party discipline would go a long way to curbing this vicious and sinister evil that we call lobbying.
Thank you very much, gentlemen. You've been listening to a discussion, Is Lobbying Necessary? Our speakers were Herbert U. Nelson, Executive Vice President of the National Association of Real Estate Boards, Joseph D. Keenan, Director of Labor's League for Political Education, American Federation of Labor, and Colonel Robert S. Allen, noted Washington correspondent and editor of Our Sovereign State. Thank you very much, gentlemen.
For reprints of today's discussion, send 10 cents to Ramsdale Incorporated, Printers and Publishers, Washington 18, D.C. That's 10 cents to Ramsdale, R-A-N-S-D-E-L-L, Ramsdale Incorporated, Washington 18, D.C.